Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Asher Kaufman, who's a professor of history and peace studies at the University of Notre Dame. Prior to that, he taught at Hebrew University, Jerusalem. And from 2000 to 2004, he was a research fellow at the Harry S. Truman Research Institute for the Advancement of Peace. He headed up its Middle East unit from 2004 to 2005. Asher Kaufman is the author of Reviving Phoenicia, The Search for Identity in Lebanon, A History of Modern Lebanese National Identity. And his forthcoming book is Contested Frontiers, Cartography, Sovereignty, and the Conflict at the Syrian-Lebanon-Israel Tri-Border Region. Welcome to Background Briefing, Asher Kaufman.
Thank you for having me.
And the latest news we have from the war in Syria does not bode well for the Syrian opposition. Yet another example of infighting, but this time the Islamists have seized a number of bases of the Free Syrian Army and have seized warehouses full of weapons, which has prompted both the United States and the United Kingdom to suspend non-lethal aid to the Syrian rebels. I guess it's just going to get worse by the sound of it.
Yes, it is going to get worse. I mean, this conflict has no ending in sight. The opposition is seriously fragmented. We have just seen another sign of it. The Western-backed coalition is turning out to be weaker by the day, and the Islamist elements of the opposition are getting stronger. So, and as we have seen in the past few months, the regime itself is getting a little bit back on its feet. But I don't see any end in sight.
And the Islamists have formed a new Islamic Front, which is a combination of several of leading rebel groups, excluding the Al-Qaeda-affiliated Al-Nusra and Islamic State in Iraq. And they appear to be the ones that seize these weapons right on the Turkish border. They have an estimated 45,000 fighters. What's the role of Turkey here in terms of, we know that the Saudis and the Qataris are backing the Islamists, even though they claim that it's not official state policy, that these are just wealthy individuals in the Gulf and in Saudi Arabia motivated by their Islamic passions to spread Sharia law or whatever the hell they think they're doing. That's their explanation. It doesn't hold water because these are very tightly controlled states. But what is Turkey's position vis-a-vis arming the Islamists?
I mean, the Turks have been very careful in their involvement in the civil war, but I would say that more and more they have found themselves perhaps inevitably being drawn into it, including supporting the Islamist elements of the opposition. They not necessarily speak the exact language as these Islamists, I mean, in terms of religious doctrine, but definitely the Turkish government and these Islamists have some common denominators, and you see that in Turkey's willingness to pass arms through its borders to these to the rebels, and Turkey up north has become their most important lifeline in terms of foreign fighters and weapons and other forms of assistance which they get from Turkey. Not officially, but it is done. Still, it is done.
Well, the spokespeople for this new Islamic Front, who seized these bases from the Free Syrian Army and their warehouses full of weapons, which largely come from the US and the UK, who have suspended non-lethal aid as a result, they're saying that they asked, which I think is kind of an amusing euphemism, they asked the Free Syrian Army people to leave, and they say that they're our brothers, that we don't want to make them the enemy. But there has been evidence of shootouts between Islamists and the more secular Free Syrian Army.
Yes, there have been cases of actually real combat taking place between these two opposition groups. This time it was done without force, or without armed force at least. They were asked to leave, and because of the imbalance of power between the two, the Free Syrian Army soldiers left their bases there. And they themselves indicated that they see the Islamic Front as their brothers. But we have also to think about, you know, what these parties are thinking, not only on the ground, but in terms of the peace talks that who knows if they would take place. But talks are that in Geneva we'll have in January some kind of a gathering conference with the support or an organization of the United States and Russia. So everybody is, you know, gearing up towards that possible event and making sure that they have more territory on the ground and more support on the ground, thinking that that would actually improve their bargaining capabilities in that conference, should it take place.
Well, that's a real caveat, though, is it should it take place. It does look as if Bashar al-Assad is feeling pretty confident lately. He's taken a main highway into Lebanon. His forces have taken a main highway into Lebanon, and they're moving on the last rebel village between Syria and Lebanon, which, of course, is impacted with enormous refugee problems. And by the way, the refugees, one-third of the population of Syria is displaced now. The refugees in both Lebanon and in Jordan are going to be suffering through an incredibly cold winter front that's moving in. So the misery that's associated with this war is unbelievable.
Yes,
yet,
yes.
Yet the international response, I know it's been frustrated because the Chinese and the Russians don't want to, are protecting Assad. But still, I recall, you know, early in the war, which has now gone on for 33 months, Hillary Clinton saying that, you know, Assad's going to go. So she was saying he was going to go rhetorically at a time when, if they were to help the secular Free Syrian Army, who were the first people to rise up, or they weren't even an army when they rose up, they were just citizens rising up. If they would have been helped at that point, there would have been a chance to have fulfilled her rhetoric, or at least made her rhetoric real. Instead of mouthing off, the U.S., you know, gave no real help to the rebellion, and now it's metastasized into this Islamic stew.
It went out of control. I mean, we don't know really what could have happened had they supported the opposition when it just started. Clearly, that opposition may have had a better chance to counter Assad's army. But right now, clearly, it went out of control. And no matter how you look at it, it's we have reached a moment of impasse. This civil war is not going to end anytime soon. That's my analysis. And despite the fact that Bashar al-Assad seems to be, you know, recuperating and being able to hold the ground better than a year ago, I don't think we see actually a victory. He is still unable to control large parts of his country. The rebels are still strong and willing to fight and die for their cause. And honestly, he has limited manpower. I mean, if you think about that from the perspective of manpower, he mostly relies on Alawite support, with some minor assistance from other groups in Syria. That is a limited human resource for him, as opposed to the opposition that has more human resources to use, to tap from.
Again,
and he relies definitely on foreign support. I mean, without Iran and Russia, with, of course, Hezbollah as a proxy, he would not have been able to stand the ground, his ground. And who knows, maybe this is actually where we can find some space of maneuver with this new United States American-Iranian engagement over the nuclear plan, with the cooperation between the United States and Russia over Syrian chemical weapons and Geneva II. This may be a place where we might see some change, because at the end of the day, the war would be determined through the outside support of the two parties. I mean, if the regime sees it to get assistance from Russia, or Iran, or is pushed by these two countries to reach some political deal with the opposition, then we may see some change.
So, again, Asha, it seems, though, that Assad basically, it seems like he can still survive having written off most of the north of his country. Obviously, losing the oil in the Kurdish area doesn't help. But that seems to be part of the problem here of why it's going to go on forever, that as long as he can hold on to Damascus and the Alawite area, he seems to be perfectly happy to wait the rebels out. And as you pointed out, they have more resources coming in terms of willing jihadis, whereas his Alawites are being depleted. But they in turn get reinforced by Iran and Hezbollah. So there, I guess, is the stalemate, right?
Yes, this is the stalemate. I mean, somebody has already equated this situation to two boxers, in a ring, trying to beat each other, but both of them are actually, almost wiped out physically. And I think this is what you see now. You see the regime a bit stronger than what it was a few months ago, but you definitely don't see the end of it. The regime cannot claim victory, and I don't think it would ever be able to claim victory under these the conditions as they have developed in the last 33 months. And obviously, this civil war will end. It will end because civil wars, they begin, they end like all other conflicts. But we are in a position now where we don't see the end of it, and there is no matter how you look at it, we are in a sort of an impasse in terms of our ability as outsiders, Western powers, or even Russia or Iran, to put an end to it. And the two parties, I cannot even say two parties, but the regime and the many parties that fight the regime are not in the position to sit and negotiate.
So when you say it could go on for a long time, Asha Kaufman, former State Department official P.J. Crowley just said it could go on for a decade. Would you go that far?
Yes. I mean, I always go back to Lebanon. The civil war there lasted 15 years, and there is no reason why we would not think that in Syria it could last that long, maybe even longer. Maybe the country would de facto be cantonized. We cannot. I mean, it's difficult to tell right now. But a prolonged civil war is definitely a possibility. So long as there is outside support for the parties, the war can continue, and that has been the case in Lebanon. It was only when the rivaling parties were tired and did not want to continue the fighting anymore, but when there was support from the outside stopped being given to them, that the Lebanese civil war ended. And we are not there now in the Syrian case.
Well, we know that there's a possibility of change in Iran and vis-a-vis Iran's relationship with the United States and with the outside world in general. That may change. But what's going to happen with the Turkish role here? Because my understanding is that a lot of Turkish analysts are saying that, that they've really got themselves in more trouble than they bargained for, because, again, there were very optimistic signs from Erdogan, the leader of Turkey, basically saying that Assad was finished. And that's when Hillary Clinton was making similar pronouncements, and that's clearly not happened. My understanding is that the Islamists in the Turkish government are basically saying, well, we got to keep helping these radicals, because actually, where I'm looking for this quote here, they are still in the family, albeit maybe they're black sheeps in the family.
Yes, that's the point I said earlier. I mean, what is funny, or maybe funny is not the right word, but looking at the at Turkey's foreign policy prior to the eruption of the civil war in Syria, when the Turkish foreign minister famously said that the Turkish foreign policy is zero problems with its neighbors. And that has clearly been thrown away to the garbage bin of history. And what you see is a growing involvement of Turkey into this conflict, and that's inevitable. It's inevitable not only because of the proximity of Turkey to Syria, but also because of the political ambitions of Turkey and the power of Turkey. Being such a big and powerful country, it cannot stay neutral, it cannot stay away from this conflict. It has to maintain its interests, and power here plays a role. If you look around Syria, then out of all the immediate neighbors of Syria, if you, with the exception of Israel, Turkey is by far the strongest and with a very clear ability, more than others, to play an active role in this war as a state. And that, I think, is clearly understood by the Turks themselves. The Turkish-Kurdish element here is of. It's not only a matter of the Syrian civil war, but it's a domestic Turkish issue that Erdogan's government has to be aware of and is aware of. There is also an Alawi community in Turkey, a small Alawi community and a very large Alevi community that has some religious affiliation with the Alawites. And that also plays a very important domestic issue for the Turks. So they cannot stay outside of it, and that's maybe that's their biggest challenge, how to be involved and at the same time trying to avoid the full empowerment of Al-Qaeda-affiliated opposition forces, which are clearly not, this is not in the interest of Turkey.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today, Asher Kaufman.
You're welcome.
Again, I've been speaking with Asher Kaufman, who's a professor of history and peace studies at the University of Notre Dame. Prior to that, he taught at Hebrew University, Jerusalem. And from 2000 to 2004, he was a research fellow at the Harry S. Truman Research Institute for the Advancement of Peace, where he headed up its Middle East unit. He is the author of Reviving Phoenicia, The Search for Identity in Lebanon. And his latest book coming out soon is Contested Frontiers, Cartography, Sovereignty, and the Conflict at the Syrian-Lebanon-Israel Tri-Border Region. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.